This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Well, the onslaught has begun. If you're familiar at all with World War II, you know that a very successful strategy of Nazi Germany was the Blitzkrieg, or lightning war. This approach of using an all-out assault with all sorts of forces at your disposal proved very effective, at least in the beginning of World War II. And what do you know? That same approach seems to be currently in vogue by certain forces of the far right, right here in the U.S. of A. Although I'm not sure that blitzkrieg would be the most accurate word to apply to what's going on at present. A better word might be tsunami. Perhaps, like me, dear listener, you have been intrigued in past years at looking at the amazing footage of tsunamis striking both Thailand in the wake of the vast undersea earthquake off of Indonesia and the one in Japan, watching the ocean rise up and come crashing on shore and bringing along with it all of the debris that's in its path. Well, it's some pretty vivid footage, that's for sure. And what always amazed me looking at this this footage shot by various tourists like in Koh Phuket in Thailand or along the Japanese coast. And what always amazed me looking at the footage, particularly of Thailand, was how surprised people were that the ocean came roaring in, even though they had plenty of warning because it appeared the ocean had withdrawn itself and gone out to sea. Everybody was like, hey, look at this. Now, growing up here on the west coast of the United States, and not far from our Pacific Ocean, I remember even as a small child being counseled that if you find yourself at the beach and the water goes out, run inland, get as high as you can, as soon as you can. I remember talking about this for some reason, I can't remember why, with a good friend of this program, Gary Chu, currently a DJ at K-Dirt in Davis, KDRT, for a long time, the movie reviewer for KXJZ and a DJ over at Capital Public Radio. I was talking about one of these tsunamis and about how it was that, you know, people should know to run inland. And Gary said, well, I never heard that. I said, Gary, where were you raised? He said, Oklahoma. Well, she explained it right there. In my case, having a grandpa who was raised in the Hawaiian Islands, I mean, people there were very aware of what, you know, the warning signs of a tsunami and what to do. Of course, in this instance, looking at the tsunami of garbage that's coming out of the new Trump administration, I'd have to admit that it doesn't seem to make that much difference that, you know, you knew this was coming, because frankly, we did know this was coming. No less than Steve Bannon, one of the main architects of the prior and current Trump administrations, has openly stated, as a matter of policy, that what you need to do is flood the area with crap. Although he didn't use the word crap. But this principle of just flood the zone, overwhelm your opposition with aggression, well, it's pretty much what's going on right now, isn't it? We're going to talk about a lot of these things on today's program because, well, we have to. Although I do feel the need to point out that I think what I'm going to have to do in the wake of the ocean continuing to flow over the shore and come inland is that I need to basically drop everything and run for the hills for a while and then come back when I have some valuable observations to make about what we can now do. I mean, I'm going to have some of that today, but I'm at a loss to counter all of the things that are going on at once. Well, not that I have that power, more to offer advice about what can be done for all of these things taking place. And hopefully bring some experts on board to really map out what we can do, because let's face it, the loyal opposition does not appear to be up to the task.
Who do you mean by loyal opposition?
Well, I don't necessarily mean the Democrats. I guess what I mean is people who can think clearly still. I think to counter some of the nonsense that's going on, we're going to have to see in this country a coalition of oppositional forces come together to oppose what is coming out of the Oval Office. And this might be a good point to survey what some of those things are. As of this week, the Trump administration is apparently going to launch a trade war with some of our biggest trading partners. Number one trading partner, of course, is Canada, a nation that is often cited as a place remarkably non-hostile to the United States. After all, we did invade them back in the 1800s. But no, the two nations, Canada and the U.S., have a great relationship. I think actually it's the world's longest border, and it is undefended. Opening up a trade war with Canada and, well, China and Mexico, which I think is our second biggest trading partner. Well, if you're going to do such a thing, you need to have some really good reasons. So far, no good reasons have been offered. And as talked about in this program previously, the notion that Trump appears to have that if you put tariffs on, say, Chinese goods, the Chinese have to pay for those tariffs is a rather profound and fundamental misunderstanding of how economics works. I gather that this week, even the Wall Street Journal, a Rupert Murdoch publication and normally a valiant ally of the Trump administration, has had to say, what's going on here? This is nuts. And of course, it is. More on that later. And of course, we also have the issue now that, I mean, just in terms of just sheer insanity, the fact that Trump has told the public that he sent the U.S. Army into California to open up, I don't know what word to use, the pipes, the valves, something, implying that the Army came in, opened up the water, and now they fixed things in our water situation in California. And he apparently ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to open up the floodgates in a couple of dams down in the San Joaquin Valley to fix matters. And we're going to have a little clip on that a little bit later, too. People that know anything about the water situation in California, or anywhere else for that matter, shake their head at this. They scratch their head at this maneuver because, well, it makes no sense no matter how you look at it. Well, it does provide a certain set of optics for a certain set of the population, you know, the guys in the red MAGA hats that think somehow this makes sense, but it doesn't. More on that later. Some headline news right now is that France is preparing to send troops to Greenland to aid the Danes in fending off a possible U.S. invasion to take over that Arctic island. This, of course, would be setting the United States against its NATO allies. Evidently, Trump had a very nasty conversation with the prime minister over in Denmark and was demanding that, you know, the Danes turn over the island to the U.S. And when the Danes said, well, no, it's not for sale and we're not going to do that, Trump just said, well, okay, watch me. See what I do. And yes, the world is watching. And the Donald has also suggested that we may want to go back down to Panama and take back the canal, which he has claimed, without any evidence to support it, that, well, the canal is currently being run by the Chinese. I believe on his first day in office, Trump engineered a withdrawal of the United States from the World Health Organization. He's also turned his tech bro buddy, who's not an elected official, Elon Musk, onto destroying the United States aid for international development. And apparently he wants to let Musk run amok with the United States Treasury Department, which a lot of people think is probably not a good idea. Over at the FBI, Trump is making inquiries as to how he can fire anyone and everyone who had anything to do with the investigations of his bad behavior regarding stealing U.S. government documents and putting him in his bathroom in Mar-a-Lago. Oh, and of course, there was that little matter of the January 6th effort to overthrow the U.S. government. Yeah, the people that were investigating that, Trump would like to see them removed. And those watchdogs that are placed all over the federal government, known as inspectors general, whose job it is to, you know, see that tax dollars are properly used, yeah, they've all been removed from their positions because, well, they just seem like a waste. Now, we understand that matter may actually not go through until Congress gets involved and they do the proper things, but, well, no matter what, it isn't a move in the right direction. Trump's minions are putting PBS and NPR in the crosshairs. I'm thinking about removing all government support of those institutions. After all, it appears they were not slavishly devoted to Donald J. Trump for the past 8 years, and so they need to be curbed. He does seem to have a soft spot in his heart for TikTok, however, who had a lot of people on board that venue supporting him. Not that we want to accuse Donald J. Trump of favoritism. And apparently he's also offered up some sort of Bitcoin scam with both he and his wife have come up with some tokens that apparently have been marked up to billions of dollars of value only to crash again. That's one I really don't understand. But I do know that a lot of great minds of economics are giving that whole thing the thumbs down and calling it, you know, what it I'm sure is, a scam to make money for the Trumps. And by God, we could go on. This is probably just the tip of the iceberg of what's going on, but it is a tsunami overflowing along the coastline. It's threatening to take houses and cars and warehouses and miscellaneous buildings along with it. And really, it does seem that this all is in sync with Project 2025's efforts to completely revamp the U.S. federal government. And in our second segment today, we're going to delve into what Greg Palast has to say about the 2024 election, which is some pretty provocative stuff. Stuff that you are absolutely not hearing in the mainstream media. But at any rate, having slapped together this very long intro of what we should be talking about, I need to take a short break. And I think a good way to do that would be to delve at this moment into the good, the bad, and the ugly. Quarter of the Week magazine, it was a good week a couple weeks back for petty revenge after President Trump terminated Secret Service protection for his former National Security Advisor, John Bolton. He did that within hours of returning to the Oval Office. Bolton, who published a book claiming the president was woefully underinformed on foreign policy matters, had received a security detail because of threats against his life from Iran. Oh, and by the way, he's granted the same favor on Dr. Anthony Fauci and General Mark Milley. And you know, we've neglected to mention up till now that Trump has turned loose all of the January 6th conspirators that fell on their swords for him and went to jail for the riot that he organized. Now, whether this group of ne'er-do-wells and thugs represents an out-and-out threat to the likes of John Bolton, Anthony Fauci, and Mark Milley, well, we don't know. Well, we do know the one they killed and the ones that have gone back to jail already are probably not a threat to these individuals. Anyway, moving right along, it was apparently a bad week a couple weeks back for tackling global warming. Oh, we also forgot to mention the fact that Trump has withdrawn from the Paris Accords on setting targets for CO2. Anyway, this apparently inspired people in Wyoming, Wyoming lawmakers in particular, who have introduced a bill to, quote, make carbon dioxide great again, end quote. This is intended to protect the state's coal industry. The Wyoming bill would repeal existing restrictions on carbon emissions and formally refute the scientific consensus linking CO2 to climate change. States the bill, quote, carbon dioxide is a foundational nutrient necessary for all life on Earth. The more carbon dioxide available, the better life can flourish. And finally, it was an ugly week for common sense this past week when, in the wake of the tragic air collision in Washington, D.C., when 67 lives were lost between a commercial jet flight and an Army helicopter, Donald Trump could not resist going before the cameras to blame Obama, Biden, Pete Buttigieg, the air traffic control, and diversity for the accident. When asked by a reporter what evidence the president had that DEI was responsible for the tragedy, Trump said, well, it could be. And, you know, I just have common sense. Anyway, that encapsulates so concisely so much of what is wrong with the 47th president.
Within hours, Donald Trump had begun politicizing the event, blaming DEI hires and Democrats for the collision. In the span of just a few minutes, Trump had blamed Barack Obama's policies, Joe Biden, and Pete Buttigieg, going so far as to claim that intellectually disabled people, or dwarves, were running airport control, as well as flying both aircraft. He also said this before an official investigation had even been launched. Trump's press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, went a step further, saying this.
When you are flying on an airplane with your loved ones, which every one of us in this room has, do you pray that your plane lands safely and gets you to your destination, or do you pray that the pilot has a certain skin color? I think we all know the answer to that question, and as President Trump said yesterday, it's common sense.
For the record, it has since come to light that the pilots of both aircraft were white men, neither of whom had any intellectual disabilities or were dwarves. Something else Trump emphasized was possible. The backlash, of course, publicly and within the news media, has been swift and hard, with Trump even earning criticism from Fox News. Over at CNN, commentators haven't shied away from expressing disgust and rage over Trump's handling of the accident. That includes aviation expert Pete Munton, who unleashed a full-blown rage over the situation. Take a look.
Are DEI policies at the FAA to blame?
I put my head in my hands, Pam, when the president said that. This is something that has been pushed by the far right for a few months now, that DEI policies are to blame in a degradation of safety in aviation in the United States. But frankly, the president is getting out ahead of his skis here. What he has said is not only unprofessional, unpresidential, inconsiderate of the status of this investigation, but frankly, it is just unhinged that he could even say with any sort of certainty that diversity, equity, and inclusion policies had any part to play in this accident.
Anyway, pretty sickening stuff, isn't it? And we do hope that the presidential spokesperson has been informed of the fact that the color of the people that were in the cockpits of both aircraft were white males. And frankly, we don't think anybody was too worried about that up till the disaster. And I guess we'll just pick up the water issue. What follows is a KPIX, a CBS affiliate in the Bay Area's report on water, to which we will also add a clip from California Senator Adam Schiff remarking on the same issue.
On Friday, President Trump posted an announcement showing a photo of the, quote, beautiful water flow that I just opened in California, end quote. By executive order, he directed the Army Corps of Engineers to open the floodgates at two dams in reservoirs in Tulare County. In a statement from Washington, D.C., the Corps said, quote, consistent with the executive order, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is releasing water from Terminus Dam at Lake Cahuilla and Schaefer Dam at Lake Success to ensure California has water available to respond to the wildfires, end quote. But there are a few problems with that.
And apparently Mr. Trump felt that that was going to help Southern California. Well, number one, those rivers aren't connected to Southern California. That water will not get to Southern California. And number two, that's water that the Corps was holding for farmers to irrigate with next summer. Releasing it now when it's raining doesn't do anybody good, except it creates the very real risk of potential flooding.
Barry Nelson has his own reasons for being angry about this. He is policy representative for the Golden State Salmon Association, which for the last 2 years has not been able to fish because of the shockingly low numbers of Chinook salmon still remaining in the wild.
California salmon are right now at one of the most disastrous points they've been at, certainly in human history. We've now gone to a point where many of our most important salmon runs are on the brink of extinction.
The fishermen say the salmon need larger flows in rivers during dry months to survive, and though they're frequently competing with Central Valley agriculture for water, this time even the farmers aren't happy.
The agricultural community looks at this and says, what is going on here? That is water that was being held in storage for farmers to grow stuff next summer. A releasing water now only does one thing. It puts people at risk from flooding.
President Trump understood that when he had those dams open?
No.
Nelson is concerned that this waste of billions of gallons of water will be an indication of the kind of resource management they can expect for the next 4 years.
California has the most complex plumbing system on the planet. It's not a simple thing to operate. And if you think it's simple and order people to make what look like simple decisions to you, you wind up making really dumb decisions. What's interesting here is that this experience with this just dumb release of water that didn't benefit anybody and threatened public safety, shows that expertise actually matters when you're running big, complicated systems. We'll see if anyone in Washington, D.C. is listening to that lesson.
Nelson says he believes that people within the Army Corps of Engineers must know that releasing water now is pointless. But he thinks, as a branch of the U.S. military, they were simply following orders from their commander-in-chief.
Wildfires in Los Angeles last month, President Trump claimed that California withheld water supplies that could have made a difference fighting the flames. He then ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to release billions of gallons of water. Many local leaders say they were caught off guard. One of them called it a reckless photo op.
This is just stupid and ridiculous and dangerous and wasteful.
California Senator Adam Schiff is slamming President Trump's order to maximize water releases from two reservoirs last Friday.
Were you made aware that this was going to happen?
I think even the water managers got only a short bit of notice to say, please don't, you can't do that, that's way too much water. And frankly, had they not talked the Army Corps off the ledge, there would have been serious flooding. It would have been an even bigger problem.
Billions of gallons of water are now rushing into a dry lake bed in the state's Central Valley, where scientists say it can't flow south and will likely go to waste.
There is absolutely no connection between this water and the water needed for firefighting in L.A. There's no physical connection. There's no way to move the water from where it is to the Los Angeles basin.
Peter Glick, a climate and hydrology expert, says the move ignores the reality of water management in California.
The farmers in the basin own the water, and that water is stored in these dams in the winter during the rainy season so that farmers can use it in the very hot, long, dry summer season. From the perspective of the farmers in the basin, I think that water will assume to be lost.
Anyway, I don't have too much to add to that. That's pretty well summarizing the fact that the commander-in-chief does not know anything about water. And I suspect, yeah, when water experts at the Army Corps of Engineers were told we need to release water, I'm sure they rolled their eyes and went, oh my God, really? But went ahead and did it. And yeah, in the wake of Donald Trump acting on his contention that global warming is a hoax, and we don't need to do anything about that. We should stop funding electrical vehicles and alternate sources of energy and instead go pedal the metal on fossil fuels. Well, seeing which way the wind is blowing in this matter, a lot of the banks have gotten on board. J.P. Morgan Chase this past week joined an exodus of big banks that have abandoned a climate action group. That's according to Felix Salmon writing in Axios. Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and Citigroup have already exited the Net Zero Banking Alliance, NZBA, which was an initiative established by the UN in 2021 to funnel less money to carbon-intensive industries and to help the world achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And I'm not sure we have much time on today's program to get into the bad news about climate change, specifically that target goal of limiting the increase in world CO2 and atmospheric CO2 so that we'd only see a 1.5 Celsius increase in temperature. Well, we're there. We've already bypassed it. That's a done deal. And rather than tear my hair out about this particular issue, I think what I'm going to do is instead resort to some dark comedy. In this case, the work of John Clark and Brian Daw, a couple of very funny Australians who had this to say.
Mr. Howard, thanks for your time.
It's my great pleasure, Brian, as well you know.
Now, that wasn't too biased, was it?
No. It's going pretty well at the moment. Okay. But I would counsel caution. You can't be too careful.
Mr. Howard, I'd like to talk to you about global warming and climate change.
Global warming? Global warming, did you say?
Yeah.
Global
warming and climate change.
Global, hang on. Yeah. Global.
What is Australia doing about it?
Hang on, Brian. Global warming.
Yeah, and climate
global
change.
Global warming. Yeah. Okay. Global. Yeah.
Warming and climate change. Warming. Yeah, the globe is getting warmer, Mr. Howard.
The globe's getting warmer. So when's this going to happen?
It's happening now.
Oh, so do you want to discuss that as well?
Well, yes, it's the same thing. Global warming means the globe is getting warmer.
Global warming means the globe is getting warmer?
Yes.
Well, we'll cover that under global warming, won't we?
Yes. Look, yeah, Mr. Howe, the seas are rising. We've got climate change, and Australia is one of the most worst affected places on Earth for
What's the one, other than global warming, what was the other thing you mentioned you want to cover?
Climate change. I mean, the climate is changing, Mr. Howe. We've just had one of the hottest Octobers in donkey's years.
Yeah, climate change.
Climate change. And it's urgent we do something about this.
Urgent. It's urgent.
Yes, Mr. Howe, it's been urgent for 10 years.
Urgent, did you say? Urgent?
Yes, urgent for 10 years.
How do you spell urgent?
Mr. Howe, U-R-G-E-N-T.
That's what I've written. Looks wrong.
Was right, Mr. Howe. Mr. Howe, what is Australia doing to ensure about...
Just a minute, Brian, hang on. I'm trying to get this down, Brian, so we can discuss it.
Gent.
Gent. It looks better in capitals. So we've got global warming, climate change, and it's urgent.
Yeah.
Urgent.
Urgent. It was urgent 10 years ago, Mr. Howe.
And at the start of this interview as well?
Well, of course it is.
Yeah, well, we'll just leave it. We'll discuss that under urgency.
Mr. Howe, what is Australia doing about climate change and global warming?
Yeah, climate change and global warming.
Yes.
Sorry, I've got them the wrong way around. Hang on. Sorry.
Mr. Howe, is it
still urgent, is it, Brian?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, can we get some water, please?
Mr. Howe, we don't have any water.
Don't be silly, Brian.
There you have it. Two funny Australians talking about doing something about global warming. Well, back in the 1990s, they make reference to. And yet, here we are. All right, in the 3 minutes or so we have left in this segment, we should address the matter of Greenland. We were utterly dismayed on this program many years back when we came across an article talking about how it was that, you know, one upside to global warming would be we have a lot of shipping up over into the Arctic, over the top of Canada. And unfortunately, when you do the math on this, it does save a lot of shipping costs if there's an ice-free passage, a Northwest Passage. In the briefing section of the Last Week magazine, they address this issue of when Trump discovered Greenland, which was apparently quite a bit later than Leif Erikson. But when he did discover it, based on conversations he had in his first term with cosmetics heir Ronald S. Lauder. Lauder pitched him on the idea of a Greenland takeover and offered to serve as a back channel to the Danish government. Trump was apparently so fixated on Greenland then that it absorbed the National Security Council staff for months, according to New York Times reporter Peter Baker. NSC staffers talked with the Danish ambassador in the U.S. and developed a suite of options for him, including a lease proposal akin to a New York real estate deal. Eager to curb Chinese influence in the Arctic, and there's a topic, Chinese influence in the Arctic. Trump said more recently, you have China ships all over the place. You have Russian ships all over the place. I'm talking about protecting the free world. Anyway, back in his first term, Trump's then National Security Advisor John Bolton thought he could secure an increased U.S. presence in Greenland, but Trump kept demanding outright ownership, even suggesting, if you can believe this, dear listener, that the U.S. could trade Puerto Rico for Greenland. Apparently, that plan collapsed in 2019 after the Wall Street Journal reported on these aspirations, which Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen called absurd. Trump, in turn, slammed Frederiksen as nasty and canceled a trip to Denmark, which I'm sure broke the hearts of all the Danes. Apparently, these days, Frederiksen's trying a gentler approach, telling Trump simply that Greenland should decide its own future. There was a nasty phone conversation reported between the Danish Prime Minister and Trump when he insisted that it be handed over to him, and when the Danes politely declined, he just said, okay, well, now watch what I do. And we're all going to be watching what he does. And as for Puerto Rico, we're pretty sure nobody asked them how they would feel about being a Danish territory.
I like the shores of America. Comfort is yours in America. Knock on the door in America. Wall to wall road in America.
We'll explore the wisdom of Greg Pallas when we come back after a short break, which we must now take. This is Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett. Hang around.